Welcome to Halal Money Matters, sponsored by Saturna Capital. I'm Munim Salam. And today we have a very special episode because we're going to go backwards in time. A lot of people ask the question about the amount of mutual funds and what was the beginning story. And I wanted to talk to Dr. Yaqub Mirza, who was one of the founders of the funds, along with Nick Kaiser. And also at that time, Dr. Mirza was working for the North American Islamic Trust, or NAIT. So there's a lot of urban legends that I've heard of from different people. And this was a great way for us to be able to clear that up as well. So let's get into it, and we'll welcome Dr. Mirza. All right, welcome, Dr. Mirza. It's truly an honor to have you on the show. I know you've been on one time before.
Right.
And it's really good to have you. Today, I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about the history of the funds. And there's no probably better person to do that than you, having been there from the very beginning and really knowing the story. Part of this is just for our listeners who have been investing in the funds for a long time, but have not been doing it as long as maybe others have, for example, for you. But then also just to be able to have an anthology of exactly what happened, when it happened, those type of things. So it really is a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Munim. So I came here in 1970 to do my PhD. While I was working on my PhD, I saved some money from my research assistantship, and I was looking for ways how I can invest that money. And I was asking other Muslims who were here longer than me, you know, what do they do? And they told me we invest in utility stocks, or similarly, energy stocks or utility stock, basically.
Is the reason why they were doing it that at the time because of the oil crisis and prices were going up high? What, why utility out of all the different things you could have done?
I think they felt it was safer investment, it was halal, and it paid a good dividend. I don't think they went into the analysis of oil embargo in 74 and all that stuff. They were not that sophisticated. So I think they were looking more at dividend, some growth, and they felt that to be the safe thing. So I started looking into investing in the stock market. Being a newcomer, not knowing the system, I was very reluctant to, you know, give my money away, whatever little I have, and take a chance. As you know, back home stock markets are not very well developed, and there's a lot of fraud, and so you're, you know, just concerned. Then I started investing. And over time, I thought, well, you know, if it works for me, why don't we form a small group of Muslims, like-minded friends, people who, you know, come and pray with us on Friday, and be able to invest together. More money, the better, because you can't buy too many stocks with a very small amount of money.
Where were you at the time?
I was in Dallas, Texas.
Okay.
But then I graduated with a PhD and a master's degree in education. And I went to Toronto York University.
Mm.
So that's where we really formed the United Investors Group.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we had about 20 people investing, not a whole lot of money. We had probably $30,000, which we invested, and we made some money. We used to meet every week. Unlike regular investment clubs, you know, they bring over stocks and talk over stocks and this and that. I was leaving that one to the stock broker. But we learned how to do proper sharing. We also learned how to calculate zakat on the return. At that time, Afghanistan war was going on. The Shah had taken over. And we were able to pay our zakat to some poor people in Afghanistan or in Pakistan.
The United Investments Group that you mentioned, so this was based now in Canada?
It was in Toronto.
Okay.
We had a good social interaction. We got to know each other. It also provided us a social forum.
Yeah.
Where we can have a meal together and so on and so forth. Then I moved to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And I left the group to other people to manage. So when I came to the United States, back to the United States, I started thinking that, you know, it worked on a small scale. Why cannot we have it on a national level where people can invest across state lines and different cities, and it's more regulated, more organized, and I don't have to do the accounting myself. So in Indianapolis, I went around visiting with four or five law firms, and they gave me $50 as estimate to do the filing with the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, poor Yakub, I didn't have $50 at that time.
No.
And obviously, I didn't know what it was going to be. So one of the law firm, you may know the person, Jim Strain.
Yes.
He used to be the attorney for Unified Management.
Okay.
So he told me, have you met Nick? I said, no. So he said, here is the phone number. And Nick, I said, I think you should go and talk to him.
Okay. So when you moved to Indianapolis, you were working there full-time, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I was working with the Association of Muslim Science Engineers. I was the staff person. And that's what, you know, I was doing. I was helping MSA also and others. I moved there in 81. So I called Nick, and he was very friendly, very responsive. He said, oh, come on over, talk to me. And I didn't know much about investing at that time. Nick was very hospitable, very generous. He listened to my story, and he said, look, I don't know anything about Islamic investing. But I invest, I manage five funds, and I'm willing to take on another fund.
Sure.
And he had one attorney, in-house attorney. He called on him and he said, okay, this is what we want to do.
Was there ever a time that in that conversation that you were having that Nick said, oh, wait, these criteria, they're too restrictive or?
Not really. He was very, very accepting and, you know, and he just took my word for it.
Okay.
Next, I then, you know, moved into Nate. I was managing Nate, acting as a general manager of Nate. And that happened in 83.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was more into business environment. And that's where I went to see Nick, end of 83. And then early part of 84, we started the process.
Yeah. So just to be clear, so Nate is the North American Islamic Trust.
That is correct. So we had a board meeting of Nate, and I invited Nick to come and meet with the board. So he came and he met with the board, and we discussed. The initial board members of MANA were the board members of North America Islamic Trust. And it took us a year and a half to, you know, get the approval. He was very supportive. He never said, you know, look, it's not going to happen. I'm going to quit. I work with his attorney, and we filed the prospectus, and, you know, finally, there was one question, SEC came back, that was early 86. Well, 85, you know, pretty much went into filing or refiling. And they said, well, if you are not going to invest idle cash into money markets or interest-bearing funds, your return is going to be less.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to put another disclosure. So we put another disclosure, and finally we got approval around June 86, July 86.
Was that the only restriction that they had in the 2 years?
I know they asked a lot of questions before, but this was the last straw, which was related to the performance. Other than that, I mean, they had many questions. It's the first fund they saw, SEC ever saw to approve. So it took longer than usual. And at no time, I felt that Nick felt, you know, look, this is not happening and not waste my time. He really was very supportive and very committed. So we started with the MANA Income Fund. And as I remember, Nate put $100,000 to start the fund. And then many of us, we also put in the money. Now, during this process in April 84, I moved to Virginia. And so Nazmi Binali took my position in Indianapolis in Nate. I came here to manage South Foundation, and I had a lot more access to funds. So we were also able to put in fund once the fund became operational.
And so what do you think was the initial amount that started with? Do you have any recollection of that?
No, because as you know, I was not keeping the accounts.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we we were just sending the funds.
Sure, sure.
But I think it was $200,000 we started, and then it grew. Historically, you know, it took a long time for us to really attract investors. And I think one of the drawback was we were the first fund, first Islamic fund, and people were just not sure, you know, whether this is going to work or not. And secondly, as I mentioned earlier, historically in our countries, stock markets are not that well established.
Mm-hmm.
And the regulations are not there. So there's always an issue, people, you know, going through fraud and making false promises. And people are not very much equipped to investing in stock market. I think that was our biggest barrier to cross over.
I think also, I mean, just correct me if I'm wrong, but I would think that the Muslim community was very young also, I remember. And so, you know, if that was the case, then they would have only small amounts of money incrementally to put in rather than large amounts. And
yeah, you're right. Mostly we were students. And as students, we didn't have enough money. And what we had was, you know, was not much to spare and to take a risk. So a many factor was, you know, going side by side. We were more kind of attuned to investing in real estate. You know, you can't buy an apartment or a townhouse or something for, you know, a few hundred dollars or a few thousand dollars. So I think it took us a long time to get people to know the mutual fund industry and investing in Amana.
So, I mean, I think there's a lot of, at least at Saturn itself and even outside when I talk to others, there's a lot of urban legends that are out there. So I want to try maybe mention some of them and you can tell me, hey, this is accurate or not, right? So one of them that I heard, I did hear about the $100,000 investment initially. But then surely right after you started the fund and invested the money, there was the stock market crash.
So we started in 86.
Okay.
And after 87, yeah, that didn't help much.
Yeah. Did you yourself panic by any chance, thinking about taking the money out or?
Not really, because I didn't have much money. I didn't invest the money. Much money.
That's true.
So it wasn't big of a panic.
Sure.
So now during this process, Nick sold Unified Funds to Mutual of New York Money. And when they acquired it, they kind of looked at this our fund and it looked funny to them. And they weren't very interested in you know, acquiring it part of Unified. So Nick disappeared from Indianapolis and he surfaced in the Bellingham, Washington state. And I'm sure you know the story. Washington state doesn't have a state tax and Indiana does. So whatever capital gain he was receiving, he had them to send it to Washington. So he received the income when he was there. Therefore, he, you know, saved basically state tax. And if I'm not telling you too many secrets, he bought a house with that savings he has from the state tax.
But, that's really good.
So, yeah, so if he doesn't like this one, you can take it out. that's the story I know.
That's great. Okay, let me tell you another urban legend, if you don't mind. The other one was, and then this will come up probably even after, you know, Bellingham, but it was really more the fact that as you were very small and growing, there was a certain amount of shareholders that you needed to be able to publicize in the Wall Street Journal. And so you went on a roadshow to talk to as many people as you could to tell them put small amounts of money so they can get to that shareholder number.
That's very true, yeah. So Nick moved to Bellingham, and he's going to form Saturna Capital, and he is happy to move our fund with him, and he will be happy to be our investment advisor. But that's our choice. We want to stay with Mooney. We can, or we move with him. I had no idea what Mooney is. Didn't know anyone. So as they say, person you know is better than what you don't know. So I told Nick, we are with you. You have been champion. You have been mentor. You have been, you know, you spent so much time and money to get us going. And this was 89, just 2.5 years after we like the fund. He formed Saturna. He and his late wife, Markel, both were partners working together. She used to do the books, and Nick would write the computer programs. And that's the way we started.
Why did you choose an income strategy for the first fund rather than some other strategy? Because you were initially investing in utilities, you said.
Income was our focus because utility stocks, we didn't love the utility, but we love the dividend. And it's more stable. You know, people are going to use water and electricity. Therefore, there will be a dividend to be paid.
One more urban legend, right? So at that time in the 80s, well, the interest rates obviously on savings accounts was very, very high. And so one of the reasons that I've heard that the income fund was started was because you wanted an alternative to a savings account, and so which could actually give you a dividend or yield in as far as income is concerned.
Yeah. You see, if you go back and look at 70s and 80s, growth was not very much known. All the technology companies and Y2K and everything else came later. At that time, people all focused on income, rental properties and this and that. It was just income. How can I have some income rather than my money sitting in the bank? Because that was a more common vehicle, savings account or credit union. So that's the way we kind of started. In later stage, we felt that we should have a bunch of growth because that's where the technologies and, a new boom started coming up. People start knowing that technology is something to be had. At that time, the biggest company you ever had was in terms of assets, how much assets you have, and how many people are working there, production facilities and all that. But now, look at Microsoft. They practically have no assets except the building to accommodate people. But there is technology, but it doesn't require building to be had. I have a software company and all they have is floppies, but the value is 60 billion, 80 billion. So that was the new phenomenon which happened late 90s. And so that's where we started. Then we started the growth fund.
You mentioned that you were one of the first to ever do something like this. Not only in the U.S., but technically all over the world. There are a couple of one or two, but for all intents and purposes, you could say you were one of the first to do this. How did you navigate through the Sharia side of it? How did you think about, what should be Sharia compliant, what should be not compliant, those type of things? I mean, obviously, there's the alcohol, tobacco, those things, but what else was there?
Sure. Yeah, I think as a starting point, my personal knowledge, which we use in the United Investors Group, and then the board of North American Islamic Trust. Bassam Usman was the chairman of NAIT at that time. Then Moin Siddiqui was a member. He used to invest in stocks at IBM and others. He was the first one who talked about investing in stocks. Then Jamal Bazenji, a great scholar, he was on the board of NAIT. And then myself, but then I resigned when I took up the general mentorship, and Abdul Qadi. So we had access to, people like Jamal Badwi, Amr Zaki Hamad at that time, Muzammil Siddiqui. So all these people were, group of scholars we can consult and we can, get advice for. And once we get going, and then we had FIC Council of North America as a formal advisor to the fund. And we had many, many meetings here in our offices to debate and discuss various aspects of investing. And Manzar Kahaf was with Sheikh Hanouti. Manzar Kahaf and Sheikh Taha, they were the subcommittee on certain investments. So there were a lot of discussion and debate, which resulted into various classifications which you have now. Like as I remember, we developed A, B, C, and F level shares. And that came out of that discussion. So that was, and it's a learning process all the way, One time, someone called me. He said, "Why you are investing in Blockbuster?" And I said, "Well, why?" He said, "Well, they sell X-rated movies." Poor Yakub, I didn't know what X-rated movies are. So I told him, "What does that mean?" So he told me. I said, "Oh, no." So I went to Halal Wal Haram book of Sheikh Qardawi. And sure enough, there's a clear guidance that we should not be participating in investment in that. So I called up Nick and I sent him a book, and we divested from Blockbuster. So, you know, it's a process which we all have to go through. Sometimes, you know, we agree, sometimes we don't agree. We divested from South Africa. We invested, but then we divested. Now we went back. There was no more support time.
So the initial criteria, just to be clear, so the initial criteria didn't have the financial ratio. Though those were just done over time because you were still thinking about what to do and how to do it.
Financial, we did not add. Financial came later. But we were first started with the Islamic screens. And then we added the financial screen.
So the origin, urban legend, the growth fund, it's said that, you know, that the board of Amana, being independent and always wanting the best return for their shareholders, wanted to have all of the returns of the S&P, but none of the risk as well. So then Nick said, "No, you can't do that. So you have to actually have a growth fund to do the risky part, and you'll have the income fund to do the more conservative part."
Sure. I mean, there are a lot of discussions like this, you know, went on. There was another discussion, and that is that funds are not doing well. And we should change the advisor. And, you know, myself and Jamal Bazendi, we took the view that how do we get the performance? What is the criteria?
Yeah.
And one board member, after a vocal board member, he said, "I'm saying so, it's not performing." I said, "Well, we cannot take your word for it. Let's decide on a criteria."
Yeah.
And if the advisor will meet that criteria, then we have something to talk about. We cannot just come out and say, "Well, I think it's not good, so it has to be different." One board member, he said, "I would take $5 million of NAIT money and invest it on my own. I will show you I would do better than Amana." So we told him, "You should do that. Don't play with the Muslim monies. And we have to manage professionally." So we, you know, had all these discussions and all these debates. And some of the people, they were investing in un-Islamic mutual funds. And my argument with them was that if you are happy with those un-Islamic mutual funds, which, why are you a board member at the Amana fund?
Yeah.
You're not going to promote this fund because you're happy with the other funds.
Yes.
And I complained to many people. I looked at the prospectus of the funds in which they were investing, and they had bonds and liquid and others. I took my case to different you know, people who were board members of NAIT, like Muhammad Siddiqui. I went to his mosque in California, and I showed to him, "Look, NAIT is investing in this one. This is not true when you have alternative, which is Amana." So it went back and forth, back and forth. But I think the best thing was to have it a criteria. And Nick always had the criteria of preservation of capital. And he will always say that my focus is that I want to preserve the capital. And when the market goes down, we should not go as far down as the market does. And when it comes back, it bounces back more because it did not go down as much as it should have. I mean, I didn't know much about market at that time, but learning from him that this is a core principle, you know, paid off.
Sure.
And then he did not believe in trading stocks. A lot of people, they like to trade. And that was also something, you know, for me personally, a bit difficult to understand and appreciate because, you know, sometimes I try to jump from one thing to the other. But you can't convince Nick to jump ship or sell a stock, Apple, which he bought it for a few hundred dollars.
Yeah. So the idea of this trading that you're talking about, also there's a one urban legend that says that the reason why the amount of funds don't trade much is because of the Islamic criteria. But you're actually saying it's because of more Nick's.
Yeah, I think, you know, Islamic criteria of trading is there, but yep. Trading is permitted. As you know, the trade is permitted.
Yep.
When you buy and sell, you go and buy sugar at some point and you sell it. You are trading.
Sure.
You don't keep it forever. So trading is allowed. Trading if you gamble, speculative trading, and trading when you don't own something and you trade, that certainly is not permitted.
Okay.
But trading, having a commodity, price goes up and you sell it, it's just okay. But Nick added another factor to it, and that is I don't trade stocks every day. And so that, you know, for Bob, yes, Islamic background is there, but this was his personal philosophy.
I was going to jump a little bit and talk a little bit about the growth of the funds themselves. Now you have, in 1994, you've come out of a recession now, right? You know, Clinton is in office. Market begins to go up. Economy is doing well. How did you position Amana with the community? What was it like? I know you used to do advertisements in Islamic Horizons, and that still continued up until today. But what else was there? What did you have to do to be able to kind of grow the funds?
So I hate to take credit. I was serving on the board of executive committee of MSA. And then ISNA, I never took a final position, but I used to travel a lot to different communities. And as part of the visit, which was virtued MSA and ISNA and all that stuff, people knew me, and I would, you know, make a pitch for Amana. And I remember in certain board meetings, in the board material, they used to say that our a top salesperson, Yaqub Mirza. I never got any money, but I was happy to see that I'm promoting something which I like, which is good for people, and which is Islamic. And it provides us a vehicle to invest our funds and to grow our wealth. Because if we don't grow our wealth, you know, we are not going to have the economic power as we need to have. So that was, I think, main thing. And the friends I had made when I was in the MSA, there were a lot. It were like Ahmed Atab, you know. Everybody knew the community and I knew. But then once I moved here, over time, I became more isolated. So I pulled myself a little bit away from the community. And with the design. Design was that investing is a very specialized field. And we need to focus on it. And the focus was to build the Muslim endowment. And I never probably shared numbers with you. Endowment called Safa Trust for IIIT, we started in 86. I was the initial trustee with Nawal and Hisham. And we had practically no money. And we raised some money, we started it in 95. After spending money on our activities, we had $10 million as our network, our trust fund.
Oh, mashallah. Yeah.
And then December 17, when I handed over the endowment back to the other people, I said, no longer I'm going to manage that. It was valued at $350 million.
Mashallah. This was in what year?
Yeah, six years ago.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
And this was after spending about $120 million on the activities of IIIT during that period, 95 to 17.
Sure. And some of the money was in the Amana funds as well, or was it managed other ways?
Yeah, some of them was in the Amana, and you know, in the private management, you had Safa Trust, $5 million privately managed portfolio, they withdrew now, and so on and so forth. So that was the work which I was focused on. And as you can see, it requires more that total dedication to, you know, build that kind of money. And so then I left them. We started very small, and now with your help managing our private funds and all that, we are back up now. I would say the family's money we are managing is close to half a billion.
Mashallah.
total funds in different projects.
Right.
And that lasts 6 years, 7 years. Well, we started with a good amount, but then we have triple to double.
Sure.
So I had this bad habit. One day I was meeting with my all the managers here in Maharashtra, Bangladesh, everybody. And the Safa Trust was at 100 million. And I told them, in the next 3 years, we are going to double it to 200 million. And they all looked at my face. You know, what are you talking about? And Umarashu came back out of the meeting. He said, I'm sure you have good reason to say what you said. So how are we going to do it? So I just vaguely showed it to him. How are we going to do it? And thank God, we not only doubled, but more than tripled. And then we gave it to him.
That's great.
The 750 million contained $100 million cash.
Besides you in the 90s, who else was actually doing the kind of marketing and those? Was there anybody else?
Iqbal Yunus was helpful. And but, you know, being myself being the trustee, one of the trustee, and, you know, founder of the fund, having a good relationship with the NIC. I think in relationship with the NIC also paid a lot of, you know, dividends, because we both felt that we have to succeed. We have to do something. We have to achieve something. And we are, you know, achieving something which is going to be here forever, and so on and so forth. You know, Nick, side comment, when we went to Florida to see him in February, and on the phone, Tanveer told him, Nick was a little bit down, as you know, maybe we pray for him. And so Tanveer told him, look, Nick, as I know you for so many years, you are a good person, a good man, good ethics, you know, you're a kind person, and so on and so forth. She hasn't seen him when he gets bad, but that's okay. That's okay, but that we overcome with other qualities. And then she told him that they have good children, they're all educated, they're, you know, doing good things. And then she added something which I didn't think of it. She said, you help the Muslim community by creating a mana fund so much that now we have money. We have wealth. And that really is the accomplishment which he did, and now you all of you are doing it.
Yeah.
And you were a good part of it. And I feel happy that I was a little part of, you know, just encouraging and, you know, being helpful and, you know, all that. It was not the money. I never took any money from Satenda or from Nick or anybody else.
Sure.
By the way, we were blamed, Jamal and me, that we are supporting Nick because we are taking money from him. And it was really so sad to hear that. But, you know, that's the way it is. Now, just to give you an example, you know all these stories. SAR dissolved in 2000, and we had education account for each of the employees for the children. So I had $120,000 into that fund for four children. I moved them into Mana Growth, and each of my four kids have like $30,000 approximately they invested. Now, the last statement they got, they have more than $700,000 each. And they look at me and they say, oh, I can buy a house for that. And sure, I mean, you can, you have to pay tax also, but not me. But Asma Munim came up with a very good idea. She said, this is mostly capital gain. You know, their cost basis is very low because they paid taxes on the dividend, the other, but it's still very low. So she said, we will donate this money to Mirza Family Foundation so we don't have to pay tax. And me, as father, I should give them that money instead of putting the in the foundation. So they want to save the tax, I should pay the budget. Okay. But as a family,
sure,
we'll still save money.
Yeah.
So really, I mean, I hardly know any kid who will have $700,000 into their account.
That's right.
And the grandchildren, they have, you know, education accounts and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I think that's the great thing. I think you as Satenda should be very proud of that, your effort. I know you're all compensated, everything else, but how it will help Muslim community to grow economically. And Nick, Markel, then, you know, Jane. Jane was too little the time I'm talking about. But, you know, no, they're all in it. And I'm just very happy that we did something together, which has, you know, so much promise and so much profitability and so much wealth creation.
No, I totally agree with you. I think my family mentions to me that if I bleed, I would, and there would be Amana logos coming out of my blood. And I think you're probably even more than me because you've been doing this for longer. So I totally get that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's really been a remarkable journey.
Let's say if we can talk about now that we're coming in the 90s, now we're coming into the crossover between 90s and 2000, the dot-com bubble is happening. You know, you have the funds actually doing quite well. I think in 1999, the return on the growth fund was about 100%.
Yeah, it was very good, yeah.
But one thing that I did want to talk about in this process was the kind of the split from Nate that happened. It happened during, I think, around the same time. And I'm not sure if you're comfortable talking about it. We can skip over this.
No. Basically, I moved here in April 84, and the fund started after that. Original arrangement was that we will pay 0.25% of the assets as a fee to Nate, or as senior advisory, you can call it, as helping in the marketing and sales. And, you know, so that was the arrangement. I was very happy that as fund grows, it will help North American Islamic Trust to do more publications and everything else.
That's true.
So it worked quite a long time. If I'm not mistaken, there were two parts. 0.25 was for marketing and sales, and 0.25 was for the advisory.
Okay.
Anyway, so Nate practically did not do much. And when the fund was paying to Nate, they wanted to get audit statement of Nate. And they were concerned that, you know, we are paying people's money and we want to make sure that these are audit statements. And during that time, we also shifted the fee to Fed Council. And Fed Council was paid 0.25% for some time. And unfortunately, they also did not perform because many of them really didn't understand financial numbers or funds and so on and so forth. So I think NetCreek came to a point that, look, I'm not getting a service. And why are we paying it? How can I justify paying it? And it was coming from the pocket. So that was also, the other reason. And at the same time, they were all the time saying, if fund performance is not good. So when you are on the board, you criticize the fund, you won't get the money, you don't do the marketing, you don't provide the service which you offer. But as you know, Nate doesn't really qualify as such as a religious advisor.
Sure.
I mean, there are people who are scholars or religious minded, but Nate as an entity.
That's true.
It's not like Amani in Malaysia. So really, it just came to a point that I don't remember the details, but that's where the split happened. And since I left and came here, my focus became this one. New board members came into Nate. Nate took a different route. And that's where it happened. So there was no fight or anything like that. And then you see, Nate was investing in mutual funds which are on the street.
Mm.
And to my mind or people's mind, it doesn't make any sense.
Makes sense, yeah.
If you're happy with that, then what are you doing here?
That's true.
Why should we pay you to, you know, invest somewhere else? Yeah, that's what basically what happened. Now, I know Nate thinks that Amana did wrong because we put $100,000 to start the fund. Brother, that was your investment. So did other people. If you had paid the legal fees, $100,000, $50,000, then I can say, okay, you have a claim.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying the need aspect. So we, you know, there's no relationship as far as except for maybe brotherly love between us and them. Going to the kind of the board itself and the transition, have you been the chairman for the entire time except minus a few years?
No, when I moved here, chairman of NAIT was Basant Wadhwan. So he became chairman of Ambarnath. And he remained for some time until they launched the Aman Fund. And we told them, you cannot be chairman of both funds when you're competing with us. And also, Aman Index Fund, we discussed it as Amana. And we said, we need to have $5 million, just like you need $10 million to start a fund. So we said, well, we don't have $5 million. So we basically put the study on the shelf until we have $5 million to start this fund. So Basam took that idea. I don't know if he took the study or not, but he took that idea. He filed with the SEC, and we found out when he filed the fund.
I see.
He did not consult. He did not ask. He did not inform us. And they called me and said, Yaqub, look, Basam just filed for a bond fund.
Earth.
And I was shocked. You know, how could you do this behind our back? You are chairman. When we discussed it, why didn't you say, I will put $5 million, let's start the fund? And if you are going to do it, you have $5 million, you're putting it in, and you cannot be chairman of the board. You see? And he refused to accept that. He did not say that there's a conflict.
Okay.
Our marketing study, everything is shared. So then when we told him to leave the, when we was telling him to leave the trusteeship, he said, Nick is paying us, that's why we're asking him to leave. So that's where we got Talat Usman, elected as a board member. He was much older than me, senior, more sensible, more wise. So I said, okay, you be the chairman. Until a few years back, I was just a kid. So I never took the credit that, you know, I could do it. So when we were asking him, Basam, to leave, he was telling people that they want him to leave because I want to become a chairman. And that was the case. I mean, you know, what's being a chairman? I'm chairman of so many things. What difference does it make? I mean, none of these things I'm chairing pays any money. So what's the fun? He then refused to leave the board. And we identified Miles Davis, Talat as future board members. And we had to go to proxy to kick him off the board. I was very happy to do that because you cannot have a person who takes away your ideas, who goes behind your back and make his own fund, and doesn't see it and doesn't want to leave the board. And since then, by the way, he doesn't have very good relationship with me, and I don't care. Mm-hmm. In the whole world, if one man doesn't love me, it's okay, I can live with it.
Thank you for sharing with all this, because it kind of puts in context the kind of the history of what people are now being able to take advantage of with the funds and how big they are.
Answer your question. Then I became chairman. Then when there was 9/11 investigations and all that, I resigned from the board. I resigned from the chairmanship. Basam Wadhwan met me in St. Louis in one of those strategic planning committee meetings. There were 50 people gathered, and he asked me that he would like to buy Amana funds. And I told them, I'm no longer chairman. They're on a board member. I cannot help him. He was surprised. He was shocked that I'm not chairman. He thought I was kicking him out to become chairman. And I did talk to Nick and put them together. But, you know, they couldn't agree. And I think the good thing, he did not agree.
Yeah,
because, you know, otherwise we'll be like a mod fund, not a mono fund. So, you know, Nick has depth of wisdom and knowledge. One time I told them, sell 50%. They were paying good money. And he came early to consult with me. And after that, he decided not to do it. And I know I think he did the right thing. I was wrong. I gave him a wrong opinion. But at that time, I thought, making money, that much money on 50% was a good thing. But who knew funds are going to grow like this, advisory contracts are going to grow like this, and Saturna is going to have $100 million network.
Yeah, no, very, very good point. Well, thank you, Dr. Mirza, for taking the time to talk about the history of the funds. Is there anything else finally you'd like to kind of wrap it up with, and that we should, the shareholders of the funds and non as well, the Muslim community should know about the funds?
What I witnessed of the Nick Kaiser and Kaiser family is really the ethics, the truthfulness, the trustworthiness. Nick and I, we shared together, many, many, many things. Even family level, he shared with me, and, he knows my kids. It's been a great friendship, great relationship, a model which I can say how, without looking at monetary gain, you can help each other, advise each other, and, be a supporter of each other, whatever you want to call it. It's been remarkable. I have a few friends like that, and it's been just a blessing. And I just wish everybody has friends like that who are sincere, who can give you the right advice. Yeah. Markel, we all miss her. She contributed a lot. I mean, Nick sacrificed a lot for many, many, until you joined the Muslim, he never took the money, never took a salary. He called me, he said, Muslim is joining, I have to pay him something. So whatever I pay him, I should get something like that equal to him. I said, Nick, you're right. You should do that. And imagine how many years was that.
Yeah.
That he just did not make any money.
Yeah, I mean, I joined in 2003, and so that was at least 17 years. So
yeah, that's right. The value of, as in Urdu we say, belos dosti. Friendship without anything in return is something that, is admirable, and I think it's an example. Now, it leads me to, hope and wish that Satana and Amana continues in the future. And I think, with the new trustees coming in, hopefully Asma and Jane and yourself being there. But my desire is that this institution should be further built. And I called Asma and Jane Amana kids. And Jane wrote back to me, I like this. I love this one. Asma is born in 84. And that's when I met Nick. Jane was 8 years old at that time. So really, they are Amana kids.
I remember a time when I used to go to the conference and stuff, my kids, who were at the time maybe 8 or 9 years old, they could give the elevator pitch for the Amana funds better than I could. Because they'd heard it so many times.
They are smarter than us.
Absolutely.
I don't remember what year it was when we visited first time Bellingham, the offices. And I think Asma was 11 or 12 years in the book. She was pushing on my shirt, while I'm talking to Nick. And she said, then whispered in my ear, do we have to pay zakah on these funds? And I said, yes. And she said, why don't you tell these people that we have to pay zakah? And I said, well, you tell them. And so she turned and she told Nick about zakah. And Nick said, if your daddy tells me how to calculate, I will write the program and we will provide that service. So they really know Amana, and they have a lot of investments in Amana.
Sure.
And I think in future, whenever you look for the trustees, the criteria is not that, who is a good speaker, who is this or that. The feeling of loyalty and not accepting any return is the key issue to grow any institution.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Mirza, for your time.
You're most welcome. So I'll see you when you come in October.
Inshallah, definitely. All right, take care.
Thank you for listening to Halal Money Matters.
If you like what you hear, please do rate us on the app stores and also leave us a review. It helps other people find us a lot easier.
The thoughts and opinions expressed on Halal Money Matters do not necessarily reflect the views of Saturna Capital, Amana Mutual Funds, or their affiliates. Please consider an investment's objectives, risks, charges, and expenses carefully before investing. To obtain this and other important information about the Amana Funds in a current prospectus or summary prospectus, please visit amanafunds.com or call toll-free 1-800-728-8762. Please read the prospectus or summary prospectus carefully before investing. The Amana Funds are distributed by Saturna Brokerage Services, member FINRA and SIPC, and a wholly owned subsidiary of Saturna Capital, the investment advisor to the Amana Funds. Investing involves risk, including the risk that you could lose money. The Amana Funds restrict investments to those companies consistent with Islamic and sustainable principles, which limits opportunities and may affect performance. This material is for general information only and is not a research report or commentary on any investment products offered by Saturna Capital. This material should not be construed as an offer to sell or the solicitation of an offer to buy any security in any jurisdiction where such an offer or solicitation would be illegal. We do not provide tax, accounting, or legal advice to our clients, and all investors are advised to consult with their tax, accounting, or legal advisors regarding any potential investment. Investors should not assume that investments in the securities and/or sectors described were or will be profitable. This podcast is prepared based on information Saturna Capital deems reliable. However, Saturna Capital does not warrant the accuracy or completeness of the information. Investors should consult with a financial advisor prior to making an investment decision. The views and information discussed in this commentary are at a specific point in time, are subject to change, and may not reflect the views of the firm as a whole. All material presented in this publication, unless specifically indicated otherwise, is under copyright to Saturna. No part of this publication may be altered in any way, copied or distributed without the prior express written permission of Saturna Capital.
Performance data quoted herein represents past performance and is no guarantee of future results. Investment return and principal value of an investment will fluctuate so that an investor's shares, when redeemed, may be worth more or less than their original cost. Current performance may be significantly higher or lower than data quoted herein. Performance current to the most recent month end can be obtained by visiting amanafunds.com or by calling toll-free 1-800-728-8762. Please consider an investment's objectives, risks, charges, and expenses carefully before investing. To obtain this and other important information, which you should carefully consider before investing, about the Amana Funds in a free prospectus or summary prospectus, please visit amanafunds.com or call 1-800-728-8762.